Girls.
I'm Sina.
I'm Danielle.
We want to focus on television and movies in particular.
Yes. Disclaimer that we are in no way film experts. A deep, like, dive. Be quiet.
Well,
I'm yelling.
Back me up on this one.
Hey, you're listening to
Two Girls Watch TV.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Two Girls Watch TV. I'm Danielle.
And I'm Sina. Danielle and I are not going to beat around the bush today.
We're not beaten.
We're not beating around the bush. I just have one quick fix, and then we're moving into our banter. Do you remember last week when we were talking about holiday stuff?
Sure. You need to be more specific on...
It was our Festive Till February episode.
Yes.
Right? And you were like, I can't figure it out, but like, I just lost the holiday spirit.
Mm-hmm.
I think we both forgot that you got married 2 months ago and you had a wedding with fucking Christmas shit everywhere. So maybe you wrung it all out there.
I did leave it all on the dance floor that night.
I was listening to that episode and I'm like, she got married.
I had a full...
She got married at Christmas time with a Christmas... themed decor wedding. That's where it all went.
Yeah, that is where it all went. You know what? You're damn right. I went too hard too soon. But you know what? I needed to. I had no choice. I committed to the theme.
We love a good theme here.
I am still salty that no one dressed up as Santa Claus at that wedding.
Actually, the wedding I went to after yours, Santa Claus came out and delivered presents.
I should have made my demands more clear. I was kind of just flirting with the idea, tossing around with everyone like, you know what, if you guys show up as Santa, that's so cool, blah, 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 blah. And then I should have just been like, no, someone come as Santa now.
We have the costume somewhere from the Santa luncheons. You express it to the wrong person.
Oh, I should have gotten Debbie involved.
Yes, yes. Yes. Also, I would have, if you needed me to be a nutcracker or what were we, toy soldiers? If you needed me to be a toy soldier, I would have put on that costume for you.
I just got the image of you as the Easter Bunny at the wedding.
What? How?
Just imagine you show up as the Easter Bunny, be like, oops, wrong.
You've exposed me. You've exposed my secret, my alter ego. How dare you?
I'm so sorry.
Now everyone knows I'm the Easter Bunny. What a thing to say. People who have no idea, if you're first time listeners, you're like, these people are lunatics. Friends, I am the Easter Bunny.
For many, many years, Christina dressed up in an Easter Bunny costume.
And I am the best Easter Bunny.
I agree.
I'm not confident about everything, but I'm very confident about that.
You had the facial expressions. You always, like, grabbed your cheeks. You played hopscotch with the kids. What other Easter bunnies are you seeing do that?
Do you have any idea how difficult that was?
Oh, I know. I know, Christina. This isn't the first time I've heard this from you.
It was so challenging because those shoes are not shoes. There's two elastic bands holding my foot in place in that big bunny foot. And I'm hopping around in it. It's just, I would not have dressed up as the Easter Bunny unless you really wanted me to at your wedding, but I would have been a toy soldier for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, can't change the past, but it was a beautiful Christmas wedding, and I am fully over, I guess now, what do we have to look forward to? Valentine's Day is over.
St. Patrick's Day.
Ugh, I hate St. Patrick's Day.
We did Holy Patty's Day in college, if anybody from Philly is listening, any of my Philly friends. You know, we did Holy Patty's Day. We did the damn thing. It was a knockoff of State Patty's Day. Danielle came one year. Maybe we'll rekindle that story as that day gets closer.
No one needs to know that story.
No one needs
to know that story. that story stays in the vault.
A million downloads. We'll tell that story.
Like SpongeBob's secret box with the secret string to the secret compartment. It's a picture of us at Holy Patty's Day.
Yeah. It's a picture of you at the Christmas party.
The thing that I hate the most about St. Patrick's Day is when I was, like, commuting in and out of the city, I always got the puke seat. Like, just always sat accidentally in the friggin' puke seat.
My stomach just did a somersault as soon as you... Speaking of what we're about to talk about today, there was a shot where I was like, I can smell this shot. We need to not linger here anymore. I'm done. More on that later.
Okay.
Yeah. I smelled what you just said to me and I didn't like it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry elicit that reaction from you. I apologize. But that is why I'm not crazy about St. Patrick's Day. It's an okay holiday in my opinion, but it's not. It's lost its luster as the years have gone on.
Well, let me tell you about my St. Patrick's Day this year. I will be coming home from Ireland.
Ah, what a party in the airport you're going to have.
The day before. Yes, we are leaving and we're coming home the night of the 16th. So.
I mean, they'll be celebrating out there anyway. That's like a big thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's going to be so many people. I'm terrified.
You're going to have a great time.
Yeah, but I'm in charge.
Oh, you're still going to have a great time.
Okay.
All right. Power of positive thinking.
I have my running heels, so I'm ready.
Okay.
What's that line from The Sopranos? I used the technique of positive visualization. That's it. That's like when he's in the fucking neck brace and he's like, D. Okay. So we said we weren't going to dilly-dally, but dilly-dally, but the dilly-dallying's dilly-daddled and it's over. Danielle and I, when we first created this new outline, which was, I just hit myself in the face, which was a long time ago. One of the first things that we said we wanted to do was have like chit chats in the beginning. And we were trying to figure out what we were going to start with. And the first example that has never left my notes to this day, by the way, in the staples was, chit chat banter, i.e. Super Bowl.
Really?
Yeah, it's still there.
Oh, good for us.
And so Danielle and I are just going to share our thoughts on the Super Bowl halftime show.
Oh, love it.
We're going to talk about the game because I was rooting for the 49ers.
Okay. And we'll leave it at that. Super Bowl.
I really like Brock Purdy. I think he's a great quarterback. And I can't wait to see more good things that he does.
Okay. I agree. I don't disagree.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Super Bowl halftime show was great. I really enjoyed it. It made me go and listen to Usher the next day because I haven't listened to Usher in so long. I love that he got married the night after the Super Bowl.
I know. I think it was the night before.
No, he got married like afterwards.
Oh.
In Vegas, which fantastic. It had the nostalgia. Lil Jon came out, which I said, if Lil Jon doesn't come out, I will be upset.
I called that.
As soon as I saw him, I said, I'm happy. Ludacris came out. Love that.
I didn't expect. That wasn't on my Super Bowl bingo card.
And Alicia Keys came out.
Also surprising.
Love that. Love Alicia Keys. My Boo is a great song.
He also, like, her outfit was fantastic. But also, there's one thing that I would like to add here. You notice what she was wearing while she was playing the piano?
What? A corset?
Oh, she had on a very long cape with beads at the top. Huh.
If you don't know, Christina wore a cape at her wedding.
I did not wear a veil. I was not team veil. I was team cape. And I couldn't find a cape that I wanted that was not $1,200. So I made one. And I was like, the year after I get married is when all of the capes will be available. And that always fucking happens when you're just ahead of the fashion curve. I have to tell myself that. Otherwise, I just get upset. I just have to be like, I'm so ahead of fashion that they haven't even thought of what I want is what I have to tell myself. Otherwise, I just get bummed out.
Gotcha. Makes sense.
Like the white dresses, the years we got married in high school. Jesus Christ. The years we graduated from high school. 2 years, no white dresses were in style. The year after you graduated high school, all the white dresses all over the place.
Oh, for like graduation dresses?
We had to wear white dresses, remember?
Yeah. I had my graduation dress for some time. It was cute.
Mine was from Forever 21. I think I wore it like one more time and then it fell apart.
I got mine at Nordstrom.
That's probably why.
It was cute. Do I still have that? I think I got rid of it. It was very 2010. It was like cotton eyelet, but it had like a pattern on it, and it was like all boning and strapless, and like it was very like all I needed was a big statement necklace, and I was like in.
Big statement necklace.
And that's I had my white, oh, I remember I had white wedges. Oh, those were so cute. And they had the little, like, oh, they were, like, patent leather white wedges with, like, we're way off on the Super Bowl.
Sorry.
I realize we are so off topic. You made me think about these shoes. I had those for a really long time. Anyway, my outfit was cute.
This is what happens when we talk about capes. We just go into a rabbit hole.
My outfit was cute as heck for graduation. That's all I have to say about that, especially my shoes. But, yeah, no, Alicia Keys' outfit was great. I did think that when she first started singing, she was a little sharp. I usually don't catch those things, but like her first note when she started singing, it wasn't there. Her voice cracked a little bit.
Okay.
But other than that, I thought it was great. I have said this before, and I will say it again. I absolutely love marching bands. I don't know what it is, but I love marching bands. I can watch the documentary on Netflix of Beyoncé performing at Coachella over and over and over again, because that's how much I love marching bands and taking like hip hop and R&B songs and adding marching band music behind them. Love it. So I loved that he had the full marching band that spelled out Usher in front of him as he was singing along to it.
Yeah. I also liked how a lot of them were not dressing in like uniform. At one point it just looked like a big party out there.
Yeah.
So I thought it was really cool. My favorite part though, roller skates.
Oh, yeah. Roller skates. And then he had the commercial that accompanied it.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. My only low.
Okay.
I wanted to hear more of Confessions.
It did seem like he squeezed a lot of his hits into the halftime show.
They all do.
They all do, but it was a lot. It was, you know, it was a lot. I do wish that there were more of "These Are My Confessions."
Just yes, I agree. Honestly, I called that he was going to open with Confessions Part 1 and Part 2, or like a brief bit of Part 1 and go right into Part 2 and like have the lights come up. That was my prediction. But I also loved how everybody was so excited for this Super Bowl halftime show.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like it's definitely top Super Bowl halftime show for me. My top spots are still Beyonce and Lady Gaga.
I was going to say Lady Gaga has to be.
Lady Gaga and then Beyonce, like solo Beyonce. That was, I think, like 2013. Both of those, in my opinion,
that were was the best. Year of the blackout.
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
The brothers were playing each other. I think it was the 40. Was it the 49ers and the Ravens?
The brothers? You mean the Manning brothers?
The coaches.
Oh, I was
coaching
like
brothers. I thought it was the 49ers and the Ravens. I could be wrong. I don't remember the teams, but there's two coaches that are brothers, and they were playing against each other. And it was Beyonce, and it was Year of the Blackout. It was like so many things in the Super Bowl year.
The only brothers in football that I know are the Manning brothers. So got
Kelsey
confused.
Brothers.
Kelsey brothers are great and all, but
they're not the Manning.
They're
brothers.
Not the Manning brothers.
Sorry, did you see? Sent you. With Eli Manning doing his little rap?
Yes.
Yeah. Just in case everybody fucking forgot, we beat the Patriots twice, and one year they were completely undefeated in season.
Just,
so,
Just a subtle reminder.
Sweet snapping my fingers, getting very sassy.
Do you have any other thoughts on the Super Bowl?
I don't know if you want to hear them because this could be a whole other tangent.
We're not going on a sports rant. We've got a lot to cover with the movie that we're about to talk about.
Okay. All I'm going to say this. All I'm going to say
the
this.
The only thing. All, only thing I'm going to say. I'm not going to say anything else, but this is the only thing I'm going to say.
I'm going to drop. After this, I'm going to drop it. After this, I'm going to drop it.
This isn't a podcast. This is like us as old Italian women on the phone being like, you'll never believe what I saw. What'd you see?
She just got back from Florida. She got such good color.
This is the only thing I'm going to say. I'm going to say this, and then I'm not going to say anything else. Go ahead.
After this, I'm going to drop it. I think I'm going into a little bit of a Boston accent here. I'm not sure. I don't know. I just watched Black Mass last night, so I've been channeling that energy. There was a lot of unsportsmanlike conduct that I was not a fan of at that game, and that is all I will say. And I will say one more thing. It was totally, 100%, completely unacceptable. That's all I'm going to say.
That's all she has to say about that.
And they are all very lucky that I am not their coach. Because I'd be making people do fucking push-ups on the field. You want to talk like that to me? Okay. My mom was like, you'd lose your job. I'm like, not before I embarrass the ever-living shit out of somebody who didn't respect me. Are you fucking kidding me?
Oh,
drop and give me 20.
Oh, that's so funny. Oh, all right. That's all she has to say. That's it.
I'm dropping it. There it is. Look, it's on the floor. It's on the floor. I dropped it.
All right. In the same accent, Christina, what are we talking about today?
Danielle, we are talking about Saltburn.
Oh, that music to my ears, the way that you say it. I can't.
Well, and then every time I say the word burn, I think of
Usher?
No, Christopher Walken.
Oh.
But I can see how you get there with Usher.
Yeah, let it burn. We're just tying both things in.
Anybody who's listening, Christopher Walken reads on a BBC channel. In a Bill Cosby sweater, he reads, what is the fuck, Goldilocks? And No,
Three Little Pigs.
That's right. The Three Little Pigs. And I will link the video to our account. But at the end, when he talks about the wolf dying, he goes, he burns. Wolfie burns. And every time I say the word burn, I think of that moment.
Yeah. I think of that moment as well, which is salt, burn.
Burns.
Okay. Before we get into talking about this, I just have to say that Murder on the Dance Floor is just stuck in my head. You know that song.
What happened there?
What?
What happened there?
The song Murder on the Dance Floor?
I know, but how did this happen? I thought we talked about so many things since we talked
about
that.
It's still stuck in my head. It's still playing in the background of my head. It's on every single video. I listen to it constantly. It's such a good song. And this is another song similar to Running Up That Hill. Is that it?
Yes. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Running Up That
That's
Hill.
That's not the name of the song. That's what's in parentheses. But yes.
What is her name? Kate. Not Upton. That's not it.
It starts with a B, doesn't it?
The song that we're talking about
is Stranger Things.
Stranger Things, yes. Running Up That Hill.
I made a deal with God. Right?
Kate Bush. Running Up That Hill, a deal with God.
Started with a B.
Running Up That Hill, parentheses, a deal with God. Kate Bush.
I was right. I made a deal with God.
There you go. Same thing happened with Murder on the Dance Floor. So Murder on the Dance Floor, what year do you think that song came out?
I don't know.
Take a guess.
2014.
No.
Okay.
2001.
What?
Yeah, that song came out in 2001. And it was, you know, up there on the charts in 2001. I have never heard of it. And now that this movie is out and it's gone viral on all the social medias, it is back up on the charts. And she's appearing on Jimmy Fallon. She's making reels with the deer antlers on dancing around to that song, and the girl is really happy. Her name is like Sophie something. She's very happy that everyone is really vibing out to her song.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always a good thing, right?
Yeah. From over 20 years ago.
Hey, sometimes it just hits different 20 years later.
It does. And it, I definitely does, because it can't, it's not out of my head. It's like I said, I said this before we started recording. Inside my head right now, it is Murder on the Dance Floor and Texas Hold'em by Beyonce. Both are playing simultaneously. Both are stuck in my head. So if I seem distracted, that's why.
You start staring at the ceiling.
It ain't Texas. That's all.
Easy.
That's all I'm going to sing. That's all I'm going to sing. Okay. So, Christina, how can the people watch this?
This is an Amazon Prime original, an OG.
Okay. Awards. So, no Academy Awards, but at the Golden Globes, Barry Keoghan, was nominated for Best Performance by an Actor in a Motion Picture Drama. Thank God they didn't make this a comedy. And
are you fucking kidding me? I laughed one time. I'll tell you when it was.
You guys didn't see it, but after Christina made that statement, she just cracked her neck. The annoyance.
Oh, did you hear it?
No, I saw you do it. The annoyance that went through your body.
I've just got to crack it out.
And then Rosamund Pike was nominated for Best Performance by an Actor in a Supporting Role in Any Motion Picture.
All right, let's get into it.
Okay.
Picture it, Oxford, 2000. Well, so does this, I'm not really sure of the year because they're welcoming the class of 2006. So I'm assuming that this is taking place in 2006.
I was a little fuzzy on that as well. I would say that it's anywhere from 2005 to 2006.
That's very important for something I'm going to bring up later.
Okay.
Okay. So.
It's definitely, because I need to also bring this up later. It's definitely not 2007. That's all.
Thank you, because there's a really important thing that happens. Two really important things that don't belong in this fucking movie.
I think we both know. We both know it.
I saw it, Dan, when I fucking saw it on the screen, I was like, that's not real yet. That didn't happen. That didn't happen yet. Whoa. Write it down. Whoa. That's what I said. That didn't happen. We are time fucking travelers now. All right. And I want to know, when we officially bring it up, when we get into highs and lows, friends, I want to know if any of you found it, or if it was just me, and maybe I've lost my mind.
No, it's also my low. Okay, we'll get into it. Right. It's definitely not 2007. Right. It's anywhere from 2004 to 2006. Let's give it that time frame.
Fine. Because Mr. Brightside came out in 2003, so that's fine.
That's fine.
Fine. Okay. Two friends who just so happen to randomly meet at Oxford University become friends. One feels a little sorry for the other, Oliver. I'm sorry, Felix feels a little sorry for Oliver and decides to bring him to his family's estate in Saltburn because his family is, quote unquote, a bunch of addicts. As Oliver makes his way over to Saltburn, mysterious things start to happen to each member of the family.
Just to clarify, it's not in Saltburn. The like castle is named Saltburn. So they're not like
in the castle.
Yeah, they're not in the town of Saltburn. It's like the name of the castle.
Yeah.
Okay. So this movie is written and directed by Emerald Fennell, who we'll call her a vet on this podcast. She was the writer and director for Promising Young Woman. Same girl. Same gal.
Interesting.
Okay.
Very interesting.
I can't wait to talk to you about this more. I had a feeling that you had some feelings on this movie. So Oliver Quick is our main character, played by Barry Keoghan. Keoghan? We'll go Keoghan. Sure. He is a vet on this podcast as well. He was in
Banshees of Inisherin.
Hell yeah, he was. He's a quiet outcast who just arrived at Oxford. He begins observing Felix, played by Jacob Elordi, who looks like he just stepped out of an Abercrombie ad. Does he not? They got one thing right about the time frame, and it's Jacob Elordi looking like an Abercrombie ad. After a chance encounter, the two become friends, and Oliver is having a hard time at home, and Felix asks Oliver to stay with him at his family's castle at Saltburn, which is what Christina just said. Felix's mom is Elspeth, played by Rosamund Pike, who you probably know her from Gone Girl. I know her from Pride and Prejudice, baby.
Okay.
Felix's father is Sir James, played by Richard E. Grant. I know him from Girls, and more importantly, to bring this up once again, this is a desperate plea. Someone, for the love of God, put Spice World on streaming, because that man was the manager in Spice World. We need to see his performance in Spice World. Okay. Felix's sister is Venetia, played by Allison Oliver. Felix's cousin Farley is played by Archie Medecki. And then their family friend Pamela is played by Carey Mulligan, who is another vet on this podcast. She was in Promising Young Woman. Okay. You're going to have to, like, give me a signal when I've gone too far.
I think everything up to that last, I think everything up to the second to last scene.
Okay. It's Ollie's birthday, and Felix surprises him by taking him on a visit to see his mom. But guess who is actually surprised? Felix quickly realizes that Oliver has been lying to him about this his whole life, and he doesn't come from a broken home, as he stated. Felix is done with Ollie after this, but it needs to carry on for a little bit after this big lavish party that's being thrown. The party kicks off, and it ends tragically with Felix dying in the middle of the maze after Ollie confesses that he loves him and wants to make amends and da-da-da-da-da. Ollie stays to comfort the family, but then Venetia tragically dies and takes her life. And then Ollie is asked to leave Saltburn. Forgotten like the names of the footmen we see smoking on break as he is escorted out the back door. We then flash forward. We as the viewer have been seeing Ollie narrating this film from the future, but without any context. We see Oliver run into Elspeth in a coffee shop in modern times, as we can, you know, the cafe goers are wearing masks, so that suggests that we are in modern time. She invites him to Saltburn, and then the plan is unveiled. The punctured bike wheel, Felix paying for the shots, Farley getting caught auctioning the plates, the poison in the champagne bottle, the razors laid out for Venetia, the running into Elspeth in the coffee shop after Sir James's death, and last but not least, the death of Elspeth, who is currently in Saltburn being kept alive by ventilator. That's where I left you.
All right. We see a cynical Oliver in what looks to be a hospital room. This has been confirmed after the camera zooms out. It's a hospital type of room in Saltburn. And we get a clue of what he's talking about. How do you say this woman's name again?
Elspeth.
We also get a clue that he's talking to Elspeth when he says, "We got there in the end, didn't we?" He turns to her and says, "It's a shame that you've got sick." There's a pan shot over to Elspeth, and we find out that she is now on life support and has a ventilator put inside of her. I lost my spot. He revealed his plan that he basically killed the rest of the family or made it super easy. The reason for that is because he hated all of them and they made it so easy to hate them and to go through this process. He had Elspeth fall in love with him enough to invite him back to Saltburn and leaves the property and riches for her. After he makes all these confessions about accidents and about no accident really being an accident, he removes her life, he unclicks her life support and rips the ventilator out from her throat and esophagus. We watch her body produce spasms as she gasps for her last moments in life. After this, Oliver takes her dead, limp arms and uses them to give her to give him a hug as he lays on top of her. A cut scene to Oliver taking off all of his clothes and dancing around the house completely naked. And yes, you can see everything. One of the last scenes that we see of him is one of his is a reminder to one of his first moments in Saltburn when he plays with a music box with four people, a mother, a father, a daughter, and a son. Which was once found in his guest room is now out in the middle of a living space on a table. And on top of the box is the rocks that were used for each of their deaths, which Felix used as a symbol from an old family tradition. When somebody passes away, we write the name on the rock and we throw it in the ocean. This tells us that Oliver went back into the water and collected all of the rocks. One of the last scenes we see is him playing with this music box with all of the rocks on top of it to signify the death of each member of the family, that he has completed the task and won Saltburn. Yep. All right. So IMDb gave this a 7.0 out of 10, and Metacritic gave it a 61, and the user score was a 6.4. And I'm so happy that it's in the middle.
The critics on Rotten Tomatoes gave this a 71%, and the audience gave it a 79%.
I have a few reviews here. What kind of review do you want?
Which one do you want to give us, Christina?
I don't know. This is the problem. All right. let's do this one. 3 out of 10, below average in every aspect. I had greater expectations of this film given the combined talent of the cast. There are some very good actors in it, but I suppose if the plot is no good, there is nothing much they can do to elevate it to watchable. Quite frankly, it's barely watchable. Some really bizarre events occur that are nearly funny nor scary, just bewildering, as for most of the film, there is seemingly no real story or plot, just interactions between some rather superficial characters. None of the characters, including the leads, are likable. The plot is explained at the end, but to be honest, it's not worth watching to find out. So I picked this one. I like the fact that they just used the word bewildered, because that was one of the words that came through my head. I had a bunch of them here, and I was like, I don't know which one to pick.
So I was reading an article, so I figured I would give, you know, read what the critics have to say, a little explanation. So this is from a Medium article. It was talking about the different imagery and the different, you know, themes to the movie. So it's a little wordy. Well, and I took little excerpts of it. I can put the full article in the description of this. But Saltburn is littered with imagery and dialogue that attest characters to be like animals. In other words, Fennell uses zoomorphism to underscore the traits of her dramatis persona, which is most true for the anti-hero Oliver, who is described as a snake, a spider, a moth, and a vampire. At the beginning of the movie, when Oliver is at Oxford fraternizing with the cool kids of his college, including Felix and his cousin Farley, Farley calls him a snake when he doesn't pay for the round of drinks. In the Bible, it is a serpent that tricked Adam and Eve into becoming expelled from the Garden of Eden and foreshadows Oliver expelling the Cattons from Saltburn. After all, the luxury and affluence of the place is a kind of paradise for the anti-hero. Snakes are known for killing their prey by injecting them with a lethal poison, and Oliver's first victim, Felix, succumbs to a poison drink. Moreover, in colloquial language, a snake refers to someone that cannot be trusted and someone that lies to get their own way, and the head of Catton's house, Henry Catton, believes that Oliver's lives are like a spider's web that he is weaving to entrap everyone. In that same scene that this opinion is revealed, Venetia Catton, Felix's sister, expresses that Oliver is actually a moth drawn to shiny things, banging up against a window, begging to get in. It is interesting how the character that says this was previously wearing a spiderweb dress, like she was wrapped up in Oliver's web of lies. However, the comparison to the moth certainly holds true in the sense that a major theme of the film is the insatiable desire and Oliver's insatiable desire for wealth and opulence, is represented by his attraction to shiny things, the charming Felix, and his equally charming home. So I thought that was a very interesting point. I didn't even think about Venetia wearing that spiderweb dress until they brought that up. So, and I think I sent you like a reel that what book is Saltburn based off of, and it's the Bible. So them calling Oliver a serpent, you know, drawing them out of this paradise is also an interesting point. One more point that I want to make in the, from this article, was she talks about Greek mythology, which imagery is really scattered throughout the movie.
Oh, yeah.
The biggest one being in the maze, because if you know...
That was so ridiculous. I'm sorry. It's very dark of me to laugh at that, but this kid is dead, and they're all like, we have to get to Felix! And they're all trying to get through this fucking maze,
yeah.
And they all just look like a bunch of damn clowns. And I know that was the point, but it made me laugh.
It honestly feels like Harry Potter, Goblet of Fire. My boy! You know exactly what I'm talking about. I can't think of a maze and a dead person without thinking of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
Don't do that. I almost spit my coffee.
Okay, so one more point. Greek mythology. Felix, easily the most quote-unquote kind and compassionate character, who is the closest to Oliver and whose lifestyle Oliver desperately claws after, is the most affected of the Saltburn residents. He is the one caught at the very center of the web of lies, just as the Minotaur stands at the center of the maze. A creature of Greek mythology, born of human and bull parents, though innocent in his creation, he represented sin and was imprisoned in the maze. Felix similarly had no role to play in being born into an aristocratic family, and though he is innocent of it, he nonetheless represents the careless excessiveness and flamboyant superiority of the rich. Hence, he is the Minotaur, and by killing him, Oliver behaves as the Greek hero, or the great hero of Greek mythology, Theseus. This is also foreshadowed by the statue of Theseus slaying the Minotaur at the front of the house, which I, you know, the statue that they're talking about. You know, kept questioning what that was. I was thinking of David and Goliath, but that is what it was. So, very interesting points to be made. Sometimes you need things explained.
It's interesting. That almost sounds like they're rooting for Oliver.
I mean, they described him as an anti-hero in a way, which I feel like we can argue as we get into our highs and lows.
Oh, we can definitely argue that, because I don't think that these people were using people I don't know if these people were doing any actual evil. I think they just had money.
Yeah, I think they represented, what did this article say? The careless excessiveness and flamboyant superiority of the rich. They, you know, you got the idea that it made them feel good to help people until it became an imposition on them. And then it's like, you know, Pamela, she's so boring. Oh, you know, we're just going to her funeral because she died, because we kicked her out of here.
I don't even understand how she died. That was kind of crazy. And his role, he just kind of took like the role of Robin Hood and like made it in this like sick and twisted, like Robin Hood on acid kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I also see him as just like, especially towards the end of the movie when he's walking around with the horns, like he is evil.
Yeah.
He is.
So let's talk about that. Does he have deer antlers on?
He has deer antlers on, but.
Yeah. So people wearing deer antlers, like that's like a weird, it's kind of like a weird, like Eyes Wide Shut shit kind of thing here. Yeah. Have you seen that movie?
No, I haven't, so, but I think I know antlers, what you're talking about.
They typically, what the fuck is the word I'm trying to say here? They mean, for lack of a better word, they mean like power and wealth.
Mm.
So, you know, Felix has angel wings on him.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically that's your foreshadowing there. And when you see that Oliver never has his deer antlers off, you know, we can kind of see that, like, in my head, in the back of my head, I was like, I don't think this kid's going anywhere.
No.
Right. And I don't know if this is true. I can't remember. But Farley, when they have that conversation, is he dressed as a horse or a donkey?
I think a horse.
Okay. So still could be symbolism that he's about to be on the run. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he's really the only one that survived.
Yeah. He is. Yeah.
And just one thing to be clear, Oliver had nothing to do with the father's death. That was just like a happy accident. And that kind of put his plan back into place.
Yeah, but it just kind of seemed like he died of old age. And he was just kind of laying in wait for... Because it's very clear that, like, the age difference between Elspeth and Sir James was very vast. So that was just kind of, like, waiting for nature to take its course. Which almost makes him even more terrifying that of a person, where he... you know, was so dead set on tearing down this entire family that he was able to wait until this person.
15, 20 years?
Yeah. Yeah.
Basically, right?
To go scope her out, stalk her, sit in a cafe, pretend to type. The whole thing. It's... I don't necessarily... In a way, I see Oliver as an anti-hero. I can understand why people see Oliver as an anti-hero, but I see him more just like as the personification of sin. I was thinking about this after I watched the movie. Like, he embodies all seven deadly sins.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that a lot because the only time I really found myself rooting for this kid was in the beginning. And it was mainly because Farley was a fucking bully. He was really mean. He was really rude. And Oliver was like on top of his work and stuff like that. And so that's where, you know, I think this is what I truly believe. I don't think it started out this way. Mm-hmm. I think all of these things started to develop over a very short period of time.
Yeah.
Because I really think that the planning of like putting a hole in his tire was for him to like, be able to do something nice for a cool kid and then become a part of that circle.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that that's how it started. It was just like a need to feel appreciated by a popular community.
Mm.
And then it became an obsession.
Mm.
And it became an obsession very quickly. And then that obsession turned into hatred. And I think between those like stages, that's where all of this started to like just kind of develop.
Yeah. Yeah, and it all just, the plan snowballed, and then, so you don't think he went into it,
wanting to kill them all? No.
It just kind of, it sort of happened.
I think he wanted to be wanted, and he got obsessed with that, and then it became, and you know what? Yeah, because everybody told him, like, you're just one of his toys. Like, he's going to be done with you. And so then he might have been obsessed with, how can I stay a part of this community? Like, and then that, then the lies came in, right? Like, how can I, like, be a part of this?
Yeah.
And then at the end, when he finds out about his parents, he panics and he doesn't want to lose what he has. And then that's where I think, like, that straight up, like, psychopath, manic behavior comes from.
Yeah.
I mean, I could be dead wrong, but this is how I'm interpreting it.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And when you're watching this movie, you see Ollie's complete change 45 minutes into the movie. Like, it is probably even earlier than that. Like, if you look at him in the beginning of this movie versus 45 minutes in, he seems like a completely different person. Because when he first gets to Oxford, this is before they even get to Saltburn. Like, still at Oxford, like, his outfits change, his whole persona has changed, you know.
But you can tell with his personality, the first conversation he has alone with the mother.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it the sister? I forget which one happened first.
I think it was the sister first and then the mother. What? There were scenes that you can't unsee.
Oh, God. It's fucking disgusting.
Side note, did you know that the grave scene was improvised by Barry Keoghan?
No, I didn't.
Well, now you do.
Where he fucks the grave?
That's a blunt way of putting it. I was going to beat more around the bush, but yes.
Please say what you were going to say. I feel that I should censor myself on this sometimes.
That was improvised. I would think that, like, I've heard this on podcasts before, and I do agree with them. Like, I think that their point is, like, you need to, like, kind of let someone know before you start doing that. You can't just, like, I don't know, take your pants off and start doing that. But they kept it, and it made for part of the movie, and it just is not, it's hard to watch.
A lot of this is hard to watch. A lot of this is hard to watch.
The first time I watched this, and I...
Why did you watch it more than once?
It's actually really interesting to watch it a second time, but I'll go into that in my expectation versus reality. But the first time I heard, like, you don't need to be told, you already know, you're just turning the handle on a jack-in-the-box, just walking towards the end, knowing that any second the ground is going to fall away, it was the end of everything. As soon as you start hearing that from him, like, all of the thoughts that I had in my head, like, what's going on, where's the twist, when's it going to happen, and then him being like, you don't need to be told, you already know what's going to happen, I was like, oh, man, I kind of like that even better than, like, because... This is a high for me. Even though the twist is there, the twist wasn't like a quick, sudden twist. It was kind of like a, oh, I think this is going to happen. And then you hear the narrator say, like, you guys know what's going to happen. And I almost like that even more.
Okay. I mean, like, we've like, basically segued into highs and lows.
Yeah.
At this point, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So that is a high for you then.
That's a high for me. I like that it wasn't like a
Well, there were a couple of times where I did that. Like, it was really jarring to see the sister dead in the bathtub.
Oh yeah, that was tough. But I liked that, like, in the end, because you're never clued into his plan until the very end, and that's when you hear those lines and you're like, "Oh, okay. I get it now."
I just didn't know how he killed the mother. So there's speculation that he like poisoned her over time to the point where she needed to be on a ventilator.
Yeah, that's my guess.
Yeah. The what do I want to say here? The background music was really good. One of the parties was playing Satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
And you could hear it just like very faintly in the background. And I was like, I know this song. This is a deep cut for me.
The use of Time to Pretend by Management or MGMT.
Yes. Yes.
I personally call them Management. You may fight me on that. I have been fighting this battle since 2006. All right? The band is called Management.
Okay.
Not MGMT. Because MGMT is an acronym for Management.
It's an abbreviation.
Oh, excuse me. It's an abbreviation for Management. Anyways, I think the set design was absolutely phenomenal.
Yes. Some of these shots were just so beautiful too. Like when they have that first moment where they throw the rock in the water,
mm-hmm.
I thought they were going to kiss, which I was like, this doesn't make any sense to me yet, but they didn't. They just talked about the rock. But I was like, honestly, I don't care what happens in this scene because this shot is so beautiful on this little like bridge.
And also great piece of foreshadowing that the rock doesn't make it into the water. And they both acknowledge that, and they're like, oh, that can't be good. And it's because the dad didn't die. That was your first clue into Ollie's dad wasn't dead. And you find that out once.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. See, when you watch it a second time, you pick up on all these things.
Oh, stop it. Okay. Let's talk about the big error.
Okay. It's super bad.
They welcomed the class of 2006 in the beginning of the movie, which means if it's the class of 2006, it's got to be like 2002, 2003, right? Because they will graduate in 2006.
I think that the reason why I said 2004 to 2006 is because I think that the UK is different with their colleges.
Years?
I think it's 2 years.
Where do these balloons come from?
Sorry, everyone. We're on Zoom, and she just held up two hands, and all of a sudden, balloons came up. Oh.
Why are there balloons, but I hold up two fingers?
I have no idea.
I have not changed my settings.
I don't know. I don't have it. Three. Okay, no, get back on track.
Sorry.
Go, rant. Go.
Yeah, I was really excited about this one. Okay, so it's 2 years at Oxford. So it's got to be like 2004. And so if you recall in the beginning of this episode, Danielle said it's definitely not 2007. So there's two pieces of pop culture that don't belong in this movie. One is when they started watching Superbad. And I was like, excuse, this didn't come out yet. And I looked it up just to be sure. And it came out in 2007. And then they fucked with us again. Because they fucking belongs. They played Low by Flo Rida, which also came out in 2007.
Oh, I didn't even catch that one.
That was at the karaoke.
Huh. Yeah, sorry I blew your dramatic rant there because I just blurted out Superbad. But yes, as soon that was my low as well. As soon as I saw Superbad come on the TV, I'm like, that wasn't out. That came out in 2007.
I am offended. I am offended by the lack of pop culture here. Because there were some parts of it that were, like, great. But how did they not catch this?
It's also, I will give the benefit of the doubt that we are also hypersensitive to pop culture of this time. Because this is when we were deeply embedded into pop culture.
But you know what? We weren't deeply embedded into pop culture in the 1980s, and we loved Stranger Things for the world that it created.
Yeah, but like we could probably nitpick things if we were more aware of when songs came out. Like we can place ourselves when we first heard Flo Rida's Low by Flo Rida. We can place ourselves the first time we watched Superbad, and we know the year that it is, and that's how we're so aware of the time frame that it was that it came out.
Right. But the biggest problem that I have with this is that they do such a clear explanation of the timeline of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're gonna say like we're only gonna be here this amount of time, and when he dies, they're like you've only known him 6 months. It's like okay. So we're 6 months into 2024 or from September into 2025. Like you're specifically giving me timeline pieces of information and then your pop culture doesn't match the timeline that you've created.
Yes, listen, I'm
like, we can't even sit here and argue and say like, oh, who knows how much time passed. They fucking told us.
Listen, I understand this. That is why it is also my low. However,
very upset.
I know. And listen, I agree with you that it is wrong. But the thing is that some people are not as aware of it as we are. And people are probably like, yeah, Superbad maybe came out around that time. They don't remember. We remember. They don't remember.
Well, they need to hire professional millennials to get their pop culture right then.
Yeah. Well, the thing is like if my mom was watching this, if my mom is listening, I don't think she would listen to this episode because I don't think she's watched this, nor do I think she wants to watch this. My mom wouldn't know the difference.
Right. Okay. But here's the other problem that I have with it. Some of the songs are meta and some of them are not. Some of the songs are embedded into the movie and they're a part of the movie. Like people in the movie are dancing to that song.
Yeah.
And then there are some songs that are played in the background as background music. I don't mind that 2007 songs are played in the background.
Yeah.
I mind when they're a part of the scene.
Okay.
Because now it's not just like, this is pop culture of the time, so I'm going to play it in the background. It's the year is 2005. In this scene, we're listening to music from the future. That's the problem that I have. So a workaround is play the music in the background.
Yeah.
So that it's not part of the scene.
Yeah.
That I feel like that's the compromise that I'm willing to make here. Because that makes sense. It's like a clump of culture in time. That makes more sense to me.
Gotcha. Do you have any more lows that you want to get off your chest?
How dramatic is it to just sit on the side of the road with your bike and just sit there and go, woe is me?
I mean, yes.
Is he so rich he doesn't know what to do with himself? I mean, like,
yes.
Walk your fucking bike home.
Yes, that is 100%, I think, what the point of that is.
I'd be wheeling that bike as fast as I could on feet. I'm just saying. What did I write here? I wrote, I have so many questions here. He told this whole elaborate lie. I don't think I have questions about that anymore.
All of those, so many questions were answered.
All right, like pretty quickly too. I don't understand how the mirror got magically fixed in his room.
That's a good one. I don't understand that either. That's pretty creepy. You could argue that maybe he imagined himself punching the mirror. Maybe it didn't actually happen. Maybe he's like losing his grip on reality. Maybe, I really don't know. Maybe it's a symbol for the staying power of Saltburn, which no matter how much you beat it up, it'll always be the same. It's not explained. I think it's more so just symbolism that they kind of lazily threw in there.
Well, they made a big point to show us that it was fixed and that he was so surprised to see it fixed.
Yeah.
I also didn't understand why he wasn't allowed in certain rooms when Felix specifically brought him in those rooms. And then the butler was like, it's easy to get lost in here, as if to say, like, get the hell out.
I think that they were on to him. I think that was the whole point. Like, I think that because Oliver's technically on their level, like, they can tell, they can sniff out like an outsider. So I think they were on to what he was trying to do.
Okay. All right. I'm done with my highs and lows.
Okay. What did you have to eat?
We ordered in because we watched it last night on Valentine's Day, and we ordered from a pizza.
Ooh, nice.
So Dave ordered actual pizza. I had fish because it's Friday during Lent or Wednesday during Lent. but I had the filet of sole, which was very good.
That sounds
with
good.
Green beans and mashed potatoes.
Ooh.
Yeah. There were very many scenes where I didn't want to eat anything.
Yeah.
Okay? And so I'm telling you right now, the point of us having a snack break here is null and void. Don't eat. Don't eat and don't drink red wine.
No, you don't want to. No. I was eating popcorn and I had part of a chocolate chip cookie.
Should we tell them why they shouldn't eat?
No, I think if they're listening to this 56 minutes in, I think that they already know. We've already spoiled the ending for this, that for this them, for them, for this, yep. For this, for them, for this, for them, for them, for this.
Blum, 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 blum. That's what it's going to turn into.
That's what you feel like after watching this movie. I think they know what we're talking and what we're alluding to.
I think so. Oh, I also forgot to tell you. My mom got us chocolate-covered strawberries, so I had some of those last night.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. You watched this on Valentine's Day?
I did. Well, we did a deal. We ordered in, and I said, why don't I pick something to watch, and then you pick something to watch. So we watched Saltburn and then Black Mass.
I don't think I've ever seen Black Mass.
It's a very good movie. It's came out in 2015. Johnny Depp is the star of it. It's based on like mob esque in Boston.
Okay.
In like the 70s. His name is Jimmy, I forget his last name, but it's very interesting. The cast is amazing. There's so many good people in the cast. Yeah, I definitely recommend it. I was like captivated the entire time.
Okay.
So highly recommend. So my expectation for this was I first heard about it from you and you were like, we should totally watch this movie. Don't watch it with your mom.
No, this is not a movie you watch with your mom.
And mainly because it's gross.
Yeah, no, it's not so much like, well, it is pretty explicit, but also.
Well, I thought there were going to be a lot of sex scenes, but it wasn't really that. It was just good. Ew.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not, it's something that your mom is going to turn on the couch and look at you and be like, what is wrong with you? Like, what are we as a society? Like, they're going to turn and question us all as a society, which, like, fair. Yeah. I think that's the point of this film. But, for my expectation did you finish your expectation versus?
Well, the only other thing that I was going to say was, as I started to watch it, I called that it was going to be an unhealthy obsession, and I called that his parents were going to be alive.
Mm.
Yeah. I was like, watch them be alive and well, and like everybody's fine.
I didn't catch that the first time. So I'm going to give you my expectation watching it a second time through. So it's interesting to pick up things that I didn't notice the first time. Like him reading the book on Saltburn, you may have caught, like, missed it when he was talking about the plates. He was bringing up those plates to talk to Sir James about, and then he winds up like framing Farley for this. He had a book about Saltburn, so he was reading up on it back in college. Like, he kind of really had this planned. The bathtub scene, the vampire scene, and the grave scene don't get easier to watch. Those three scenes don't get easier to watch. And then I brought up to you the foreshadowing of the stone being thrown into the water, which I thought was really interesting. I think I liked it a lot more the second time through, because it feels very much like you need to be able to pick up on all the, like, Greek mythology, the biblical references, and you get a lot more of that the second go around, in my opinion.
No, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Do you have an IRL moment?
Karaoke!
I was wondering if you were going to make that your IRL moment.
Well, my favorite, this was the part that had me like giggling. when the father's like, the words are on the screen, Oliver. That's the best part. Sorry.
It's okay. No, that was really funny. I also liked Rosamund Pike a lot in this movie. I didn't mention this before in The Highs, but I felt like her banter was really good. Her and Carey Mulligan together, it was great.
Yeah.
It was typical, like, dry British humor.
Mm-hmm.
My IRL moment is watching The Ring and being freaked out, because that was truly a canon event in 2005. And I looked up the date of that movie, came out in 2005. I looked it up.
All right.
I knew if I was going to bring up Superbad 2007, I had to look up when The Ring came out. It's 2005. Okay. But if you were a child in 2005 at a friend's sleepover, we all watched The Ring. You didn't watch The Ring?
Absolutely not.
Oh, I 1000% watched The Ring. The video played, and then as soon as the video was done playing, the landline of the person's house, the phone started to ring.
Get the fuck out of here.
Every time. Actually, the first time I ever watched it, the phone immediately rang after watching the movie in The Ring. And then the phone rings, and then she says 7 days. Anyway, canon event. Love that. We all had the same reaction. We all freaked out to the movie.
Wait, so your phone rang?
Yes. I was at my friend's house, and we were all watching the movie, and in the movie The Ring, that you watch the movie in The Ring, and then the phone rings, and Samir answers and says 7 days. When we were watching it in real time, my friend's landline rang as soon as we finished the movie.
Oh my God, I'm going to be sick. Oh my God. I'm going to throw up everywhere.
It was terrifying, but it was a telemarketer.
God, it's awful. I'm going to throw up. Just like that stupid scene. That's what I was trying to talk about earlier, where there's just like throw up all over the sink and it's like splattered everywhere.
That's the scene you were talking about?
That's the one where I was just like, I can smell this scene.
Oh,
I can smell the bile sitting on this bathroom counter.
Oh, my goodness. All right. I think we've exhausted this.
I got to get it out. Okay. So thanks, everybody, for listening. You can reach us on Instagram and Twitter at Hey It's Two Girls. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Classic Cena. Danielle's on Instagram at Danielle Kobianki. You can send us an email with reviews, suggestions at twogirlswatchtv@gmail.com, to us spelled out T-W-O. The YouTube channel's Two Girls Drink Beer. And if you have a moment, like, rate, and review the podcast.
All right, everyone. Enjoy your weekends, and we'll catch you next week. Bye.